This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. In the late 1930s, the Nazis banned Jewish professors from teaching in German universities. Many of the scholars fled to the American South, where they met with more anti-Semitism. But some of the exiled intellectuals landed jobs teaching at predominantly black colleges and universities. North Carolina Central University is one example. The Jewish professors and their black students quickly realized that both had endured similar experiences of racial discrimination. The relationship that grew between these two groups is featured in the documentary From Swastika to Jim Crow. The film also highlights the similarities between racism in the South and in Nazi Germany. From Swastika to Jim Crow screens tonight, 6 o'clock, UNC School of Law in Chapel Hill, part of the law school's ongoing exhibit, Lawyers Without Rights, Jewish Lawyers in Germany Under the Third Reich. Joining me now is Ted Shaw. He's a law professor at UNC. Welcome back, Ted. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Also with me is Eric Muller. He is also a law professor at UNC. Eric, welcome back.
Thanks, Frank.
Eric, tell us about tell us about the whole series, first of all, the motivation behind this series, Without Rights.
So a number of years ago, the American Bar Association partnered with the Federal Bar of Germany to create an exhibit that documents the fate of the legal profession generally, but specifically Jewish lawyers in Nazi Germany in the 1930s. As is the case in this country, the legal profession was a profession in which many Jews found success in the Weimar years leading up to the Nazi accession to power. Similarly to the rest of the German Jewish population, lawyers were eventually driven out of the profession and then either driven out of the country or murdered. And so this exhibit at the law school tells the story of the persecution of Jewish lawyers in Germany and does it through personal narratives following a number of individual attorneys either to their deaths in the East or to lives elsewhere in the world.
For those who did make it to the United States, what was their reception here?
Anybody coming from Germany at that period of time was coming from a country that was seen as an enemy. So there was actually a fair amount of discrimination against German Jewish refugees because they were German, which is somewhat paradoxical given that they had fled Germany because they were Jews. But of course, they also came to a United States in which anti-Semitism was much more prevalent than it is today and also much more legitimate and kind of at the surface. So schools had either didn't accept Jews or if they did, they would accept just a very small number. All kinds of private organizations, neighborhoods would be barred to Jews. And so really these folks that came from Germany came to a United States that was primed in a couple of different directions not to be a very friendly reception.
And when you say legitimate, you mean
I don't mean
legalized.
Right,
it was
right.
Legal.
I don't mean legitimate in the sense of being good. I mean legitimate in the sense of part of the public discourse of the day.
And authorized by law in many cases.
Right.
So let's talk about this particular film, Ted. This focuses on Jewish lawyers and professors, I guess, at HBCUs in the 1930s. Why is that? Tell us about that and about Jewish professors coming over and then teaching at HBCUs. How did that happen?
Well, as Eric said, they were discriminated against, those who came over. They weren't openly welcomed at many of the at the white universities. In the introduction, you said predominantly black universities. These universities were all black at the time, of course. Yeah. Although there were some other white faculties at these institutions already, but these institutions they hired many of these, or significant number of these, Jewish professors who came to the United States and who witnessed another kind of discrimination that perhaps they weren't all that conscious of before they came. The wonderful thing about the documentary is, at least for me, hearing a kind of two-way set of observations. You have the Jewish professors who came over and their eyes were open. Some of them talk about that and the relationships that they formed with the students. And one of the things that I appreciated was the respect that many of them had for the students they taught. which ran counter to the notions of these students being intellectually inferior, et cetera. But on the other side, you know, there are black students who make observations many years later about the effects of these professors on their lives and how it opened up their eyes. One of them said that it made them aware of discrimination for the first time. And I thought to myself, how can that be? You know, you're black, you're living in the United States in the late 30s, early 40s. You know, this is a segregated country, particularly in the South. But that's what that individual said.
We talked about the film, and we have a clip from one Jewish scholar. This is John Hertz. He's speaking in the documentary and talking about his motivation to teach at this university.
I could assume that black people, black students, had much more interest in and also much more understanding of movements like fascism and Nazism or racism, etc., etc., and that it was therefore relatively easy to teach them something which may not have been as easy as that at a white college.
That's a clip of Jewish scholar John Hertz from the 2000 documentary From Swastika to Jim Crow. The documentary screens tonight at UNC School of Law. My guests are UNC Law professors Eric Mueller and Ted Shaw. So, Eric, what about this relationship? I mean, it's easy now to see parallels between Nazism and Jim Crow. How close were the ties? Were the Nazis taking notes?
The Nazis very clearly were aware of the system of racial oppression in the United States. I don't know that it's been documented that there was a kind of direct copying, but they were certainly aware of the similarities in sort of this kind of racial worldview, I guess you'd call it. Remember that the Nazis saw the Jews not as a religion but as a race and an inferior race. Remember, too, that in the 1930s there were two countries in the world that were vying for the leadership in this wonderful new science of eugenic sterilization. Those two countries were the United States and Nazi Germany. So, you know, for these professors coming from the Germany of the 1930s, where they would have walked past park benches in Berlin or Frankfurt or wherever that said, you know, no Jews allowed or for Aryans only. And then they come to a place where there are park benches that would say, you know, colored only or for whites only. You know, they didn't need to be exquisitely sensitive to see these connections.
So there are connections, Ted, but there are also cultural differences. There have to be. What about just in terms of our university system, German universities, American universities in general? What were the cultural differences and how well were they brokered when these professors came to teach?
Well, of course, there were differences. The university system in Germany, at least what I know about it, was one of the best university systems in the world then, as it is now. When they came to the United States and they were able to get jobs at these black colleges that were set up pursuant to Plessy versus Ferguson's separate but equal command, these were not institutions that were respected as being the best and the strongest academically or otherwise. Physically, they didn't have the same resources. The buildings weren't, you know, the same, et cetera. And so I think that it was an adjustment. It had to be an adjustment for these professors who came from Germany to the United States and were part of institutions that were inferior institutions or perceived as inferior institutions in the segregated South.
Well, there's a wonderful clip in the film. This is Donald Cunningham, and he's talking about an encounter at Tougaloo College with Professor Ernst Barinsky.
Barinsky was always concerned about reading and scholarship, and he felt that because he spent all his time reading books, that everybody else should spend all of their time reading. I'm sitting out on the campus on one of the benches with two young ladies, just chilling, as they say today. And Barinsky walks up to me, you know, the 4x4 Barinsky, lamb sideways, he's the same height. "Mr. Cunningham, you should be reading as I speak." And he goes on this thing for like, this rag for like 20 some minutes. And several days later, when I come in to do my little bit as a research assistant, he apologizes profusely. You know, oh, I realize you were with young ladies and that was inappropriate and so on and so forth.
That's a clip of Donald Cunningham from the documentary From Swastika to Jim Crow. Screens tonight at the UNC School of Law. So we're talking about that. What about the other? I mean, there's also this other possibility of people coming in, noting the similarities between the treatment of Jews in Germany and Jim Crow South. But there could be, and I wonder if there was any sort of resentment of you trying to compare your situation with mine. We often find this in situations where there's kind of a grief comparison. And so, don't you dare, you know. Was there much of that? Do we know?
Oh, yeah. There absolutely was. I've actually been looking at this a little bit in my own research recently, and there was quite a robust discourse among advocates for African-American civil rights in the 1930s. Including somebody like Langston Hughes, who were explicitly making the argument that there was no difference between a Talmadge and a Goebbels or whatever. Mm-hmm, yeah. It was a very common rhetorical strategy, and as you can imagine, then just as now, that got people's hackles up.
And the question of actually who has the right to teach these things, and it does come up in the documentary itself. This is Professor Ernst Munoz, who is talking about a course he taught at North Carolina Central in Durham, followed by a response by his son, Gabriel. And so let's listen to how this tricky territory was navigated.
I designed a course called the Race Problem on Negro Problem. I do not remember exactly what title it was. It was in the catalog, and I gave it the first year. I gave it as a non-credit course, and there also some of my colleagues took part, and we had real historical discussion. I mean, without enmity, without venom, as far as I remember.
I mean, I think initially that was a big success and generated a lot of interest and support. And over time, if I understood him correctly, there became a larger group who wondered what he was doing teaching it. And should this really be taught by a white man? And I think it's part of his sort of philosophical bent to wonder about that himself.
That was Professor Ernest Munoz and his son Gabriel from the documentary From Swastika to Jim Crow, which screens tonight at the UNC School of Law. Well, whatever the propriety of this kind of teaching, what do you think the effect was in general of in this period and the immediate aftermath, Ted?
Well, let me say something about this last point also, if I may, because one has to remember that these institutions, the historically black colleges at that time, the segregated black colleges, were some of the only places where educated black people could get the kind of jobs that they had. And so the idea that some of those slots were going to be taken by these refugees from Germany, who were also white, I'm sure that it caused some discomfort. But having said that, the idea about who teaches what is a debate that has continued right up to the present. Who should teach African-American history? Who should teach the culture of other people? And, of course, anybody should be able to study it. At the same time, there's a even today, a dearth of opportunities for African American and other people of colors, job possibilities in higher education. So I'm sure that was on the table back then, and there was some resentment. At the same time, you have a lot of people, and you see it in the film, and it's a wonderful thing, who were taught by those professors who stayed with them all their lives, and they valued their experience.
Well, Donald Cunningham speaks to that directly in the film. Let's listen to a clip.
I went to a luncheon at MIT once, and it was students who had been in Morehouse, and Benjamin E. Mays, who was a Morehouse president, had been their mentor. And they were all giving these great Benny Mays stories and how he'd shaped their lives and this really, this black man, this strong black intellectual, has shaped their lives in these, in this critical way. And I remember sitting in that luncheon feeling a bit awkward, because my mentor was not a black man. It was a white Jewish immigrant. And so I'm sort of thinking, as they're thinking, they were saying all these things about how as men they were learning how to negotiate the world because they had this black man as a role model. And I was thinking, well, so what does this mean for me in terms of how I view the world and the things that I want to do?
Donald Cunningham from the documentary From Swastika to Jim Crow that screens tonight at UNC School of Law. Eric, what does the what impact can we measure the impact on the civil rights movement, the later civil rights movement, of this kind of teaching?
Certainly the phenomenon of these Jewish professors working with African-American students in some ways is a direct precursor to some of the strong connections that will be seen in the emergence of the full-blown civil rights movement in the 1960s, where many, many Jews worked arm-in-arm with African-American leaders towards greater civil liberties for African-Americans. But there's also, I have to say that there's also a tinge of sadness that I hear in the clip that we heard about Professor Manasse and the question of whether it's appropriate for a white man to be teaching a course on racism. Because obviously, after the civil rights era, that relationship between blacks and Jews does begin to fray in certain ways. And so there is a certain melancholy, I think, to the history that's about to unfold.
Ted, what do you think? The impact?
Well, I want to point to something and try to do it succinctly that was going on at that time. The most famous footnote in American constitutional jurisprudence is footnote 4 in a case called U.S. versus Caroline Products. It was about regulation of milk fillers. It was kind of the culmination of a battle between President Roosevelt and a conservative Supreme Court coming out of an era called the Lochner era. But the point is that in the middle of this case about regulation of milk filler, this footnote drops. And the footnote talks about how we should look at instances in which race is in play a little bit differently, and perhaps look at these instances with more scrutiny and less deference to the ordinary political processes, which don't work for minorities. And so it gave us what's called tiered scrutiny, strict scrutiny with respect to race. But here's the point. It's never mentioned in footnote 4 or anywhere else, but that case was decided in 1938. And it's difficult to believe that the Supreme Court, particularly with a Brandeis on it, Frankfurter about to come on the court, but they were conscious of what was going on in Germany. So the backdrop of what was going on in Germany with respect to Jews in some ways informed the shift in law, which was a warning shot about the court beginning to embrace the Constitution's 14th Amendment in a meaningful way and to move away from Plessy versus Ferguson, kind of the road to Brown versus Board of Education. The role of Jews in law is one that, with respect to the rights of African Americans, is a role that deserves a lot more of attention than it's gotten. I was talking with Eric on the way over about a memorandum that plotted out a strategy to attack Plessy versus Ferguson, written by Nathan Margold at the end of the 1920s, the Margold Report. Eric is right. End of the 1960s, that relationship began to fray. It has its tensions today, although it also is a relationship that for some continue today.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program today, Ted Shaw and Eric Muller. Ted and Eric are law professors at UNC Chapel Hill. They're co-leading a discussion following a screening of the documentary From Swastika to Jim Crow. The documentary screens tonight, 6 o'clock, UNC School of Law. Just ahead, we'll talk with musician Scott Ainsley about the African-American roots of American blues. Stay tuned.